Good morning, please be seated. This is the time set for oral argument before the Northern panel. Our first case this morning is Alcantara versus Walmart Stores, case number 60566. Mr. Tanner, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Justices for allowing us this opportunity to have oral argument. I think this is a case that has to be looked at closer. And I want to reserve maybe 5 minutes in rebuttal time. But I really think the only issue here is whether or not this claim should be precluded. We're talking about Sarah, a minor, I think she's 11 years old now. At the time this case was filed, the original case, I think she was 2 years old.
Why wasn't she brought in with the
original question? Why wasn't she brought in? She didn't want to participate in this case. As a plaintiff's lawyer, she had no interest in pursuing, the estate had zero assets. It was a zero asset estate. The estate had a lawsuit, had a wrongful death lawsuit. The mother, Jean Borman's name, which we later dismissed, who was the mother, and then the children, she was a child. But her mom, Hiroko Alcantara, did not want to be tied up in litigation. She's Japanese. I don't know if it's a cultural thing. I really don't know. I can't answer that. She came to our office. She said, I don't want to do it. I don't want to participate. I don't want to be a claimant.
So it was after there was a verdict against Walmart.
No. It was long before that.
All right.
Yeah. Long before that. We actually would have named her as a party had she participated, but look, I can't force her to file a lawsuit. I'm a plaintiff's lawyer that would gladly have, represented her interest in the case. The estate was opened. The petition was published. She was named as a beneficiary. It was an error. Judge Kirshner believed that we didn't disclose her, we didn't know about her. They actually knew about her. Okay. Before the case was ever filed, an estate was opened so this estate could pursue its wrongful death lawsuit. Right? The estate's open first. The petition was published as a matter of record. So she was known by all the parties. There's no dispute about that. In fact, they kind of laid low in the trial and said, Judge, we want a mistrial. Mr. Tanner has intentionally hidden this person who should have been named as a party, and he didn't name her as a party. We want a mistrial. We want a dismissal. Well, Judge Denton said, well, hold on a second. You got a copy of the petition, right? That was filed before the lawsuit was ever filed. She's named as a beneficiary. I find it, I noticed that she's out there. She is a beneficiary. And so the issue here for you is, did Judge Kirshner apply the law correctly when Judge Kirshner said the estate represents the interests of the individual heirs? As a matter of law, I find her claim is barred. She can't bring the lawsuit.
Mr. Tanner, could you clarify for me the damages that you seek in this case?
Yeah, the damages that are provided in NRS, the wrongful death statute for heirs, which are, I'll lay down on page 22, specifically that if you look at the appendix, page 22, this is what we're seeking. Our second cause of action seeks the damages to the heirs. In paragraph 33, these damages include compensation for pecuniary damages for his grief and sorrow, loss of parental support. And remember, this is a minor, so she didn't have any support of this father for an entire life. Okay? So we're seeking loss of support, loss of companionship, loss of society, company consortium, and damages for pain, suffering, and disfigurement of the deceased. That's what we're seeking. That's what the statute allows. The estate's damages and the estate's claim is laid out on our third cause of action under NRS, totally different section, NRS 85, paragraph 5A and B.
Let's discuss them separately. Why hasn't the estate's claim been resolved by issue preclusion?
Well, the estate's claim has.
Okay, so you're only seeking damages for this one remaining heir.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I guess I was confused. It sounded as if you were seeking damages under 41085, 4 and 5. Is that what you're seeking?
No.
You're only seeking damages for the heir.
Yeah, this is an appeal of the order dismissing Sarah Alcantara as a party plaintiff.
Right, I got that.
Yeah.
And she is seeking damages for herself.
That's right.
not for the estate.
No, the estate has its separate claim for damages. And, you know, these claims for damages are limited to medical expenses. I mean, it's laid out there. So this appeal is about Sarah's claim and her right to recover damages.
Only?
Only.
All right. So there's no appeal for the estate's damages?
No.
But that was included in your third claim for relief.
In my third claim for relief.
Didn't you seek damages that would be recovered for the estate?
We did. But
and why wouldn't those be dismissed? Because of the prior case. That's
well,
what
I agree with
you. Understand.
I think they are.
Okay.
I think they are.
You're not, so this appeal would not seek recovery of damages under subparagraph 5 of the statute.
No, not as to Walmart, because they were a party.
Right.
And I think the factors for race judicata are made out of Moody. They're the same party. I think they're barred from filing the answer. But not set all on top.
Right.
And I think it's just, you know, sometimes you can go into details about what does privity mean, and I like Judge Kirk's definition of privity. If you look on page 100, I'm going to try and lay this out for you, but I think you've got to ask the question, how can the estate represent the interest of the member if the estate's claim is only limited to medical recovery, of medical benefits, and the minor's recovery is entirely different claim for damages? I think that's the question is, can you conclude as a matter of law that the estate's claim represents the interest of the minor? And here's what Judge Christian says, she was sent in the second of privity. And I don't think it bears repeating. Because if you look at what she says in her order, finding page 105 of our appendix, paragraph 5, it says, privity is defined in section 31.1 of the restatement second of the law of judgments. Provides a person who is not a party to an action, but who is represented by a party, is bound by and entitled to the benefits of a judgment as though he were a party. So we got to ask ourselves, okay, Sarah was not a party. No dispute about that. She was not a party. Was she represented by a party? Did the estate of Michael Boren represent the interest of Sarah Alcantara? And the answer has to be absolutely not. If that were the case, then why do we have the other heirs who were parties in the lawsuit? We have Peter Boren, Matthias Boren. The other children of Michael Boren were separate, independent, named party plaintiffs who brought their claims for damages. I don't think, and it's just that's how plain and straightforward this case is. I don't think we should be looking at Restatement Second, some other set of laws. The law in Nevada's statute with regard to wrongful death claims is clear. An estate has a claim for recovery of its medical benefits and the other funeral expenses, those limited amount of damages. The heir's claim for damages are spelled out in an entirely different section. For loss of companionship, loss of consortium, loss of society, loss of support, those damages are spelled out in an entirely different section. And so I was just going to submit to you that this case has to be reversed. I don't think we should be, I think we've got to follow what our statute provides. And look, I wish she should have been, I wish I would have represented her. Had she been a party, I think this jury would have awarded her $250,000. Because that's what they awarded her other siblings. She had three siblings. I would have loved to have had her name as a party. I couldn't force her hand. But there's one party who could have forced her hand, and that was Walmart. There is a jury. There's statutes that provide for this situation. And if they're a potential claimant, they could have joined her as a necessary party, as an involuntary claimant. And we've cited that if you look at the section on the brief that discusses joinder.
My understanding is that Walmart got a defense verdict, so she might have been defensed. Blackenut might have gotten...
No, but I understand that, Judge. But my point is, they didn't know before the jury made its verdict whether or not they were going to win or lose. We really thought we were going to win as to Walmart and Blackenut. I'm not going to go into the issues involved in that case, but my point is, the potential liability for another plaintiff would have been another $250,000. And they were fully aware of that. They could have joined the Sarah Alcantara, a minor, as a, as an indispensable party, as an involuntary plaintiff. And the rules provide for that. I don't think I need to cite you chapter and verse about that. I just think this is straightforward. I think this minor deserves the right to be compensated for her loss of support for her entire life. She never knew her dad. Right? Doesn't have any financial support from her dad, and she has a right to pursue a claim for recovery for this wrongful death case. And this is about claim preclusion. Focus on claim preclusion. An estate has a duty to beneficiaries if there are assets in an estate, and the administrator is appointed to pay whatever assets the estate has. That's not this case. This estate had zero assets. This estate's only asset was a wrongful death lawsuit, a claim. This is about whether or not this estate, its claim, represented a claim of a minor. And it's impossible. It's nonsensical to believe that this estate's claim, separate and independent, limited to only medical expenses, represented the interest of the heirs, whose claim
is... Sarah share in the award that was given to the estate?
Sarah will share, absolutely. Now, that hasn't been paid, but Sarah will only be covered when the estate is paid.
Right.
Then we will do a petition for distribution.
Right.
And we will distribute whatever remaining assets, whatever assets that estate has. In this case, they are awarded medical expenses. And there is a lien from UNC Hospital for... Most of it is medical expenses for a lien. That's what it is. So we've got a creditor claim from UNC Hospital to pay the medical lien. That's what it is. But if there is money, if there were money, then there would be a petition for distribution. The estate, whatever assets it had, would pay to those heirs. But remember, its damages are very limited, right? The heirs' damages are loss of companionship, loss of support, loss of society. All of those measured damages are totally independent from the estate's claim. I think the judge wanted to, look, I'm going to give her credit. She outlined a very lengthy, detailed findings of fact conclusions. But it's wrong on the law. And we've got to make sure our law treats everyone fairly, even minors. Even people that maybe should have been parties, but they weren't. Whose fault is that? They wanted to blame that on. I think their strongest case is Mr. Kenny's fault. He should have named her. Look, they have an opportunity under the rules to join her as an involuntary plaintiff. And I'm just going to submit to you, I don't know how much time I have with her. But do you have any other questions? I really think that's really the issue we should be focused on, is the issue about privity. The other elements...
I think we understand your position. You have 3 minutes if you want to rebut.
I'll just reserve that.
Thanks. Ms. Ensminger.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Brenna Ensminger, and I represent the respondent at Walmart Stores. I think... To begin, there are two critical admissions that Mr. Tanner just made to your Honor's question about whether or not Sarah Alcantara will share in the assets or the distribution of the estate. He said absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, at trial, the jury awarded more damages than was asked for to cover the University of Medical Center lien for Mr. Boren's medical expenses. The issue is not whether or not they have the same damages claims. And as a matter of fact, none of the heirs have the same damages claims. None of them would, because it has to do with what kind of support their father would have rendered, what kind of grief, sorrow, etc., the individual plaintiff.
Actually, I think the issue does begin with what has been alleged in the complaint for damages. Ms. Alcantara is seeking a claim for herself as an heir under 41085 sub 4. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Okay. And did the complaint also seek damages on behalf of the decedent's estate under subparagraph 5 of the statute? It sounded like the third cause of action did that.
Well, that was not my understanding from Mr. Tanner's brief. He said so just now in response to that.
He read from it, so I thought that was the case.
That I'm not sure of without double-checking the complaint. I was not aware that that was an issue.
Let's stay focused just on Ms. Alcantara's claim and subparagraph 4. Why doesn't she have her own claim? How is that abridged by claim preclusion?
Under the statute, subpart 2 actually provides the cause of action, the negligence cause of action, for heirs and the estate. The other subparts do categorize what kinds of damages claims the various plaintiffs can pursue, whether they be heirs or indeed the estate. But the key issue here is whether or not there is, in the context, enough intertwining between the interests of Alcantara as an heir to the decedent and whether the decedent's interests were indeed litigated in the Bourne lawsuit. When we look at the policy underlying Restatement Second Law of Judgments set forth in subsection 43, it's stating that we should be looking at whether or not the plaintiff's interests in the first action were actually aligned. There is alignment with the plaintiff's interests in the second action. When we're looking at whether or not there is privity, indeed, under the literal definition of privity, it exists here. She is indeed an undisputed beneficiary of the estate of Michael Bourne. And that is admitted by Michael Smith, the administrator, at the Bourne trial. It's admitted by Mr. Tanner here in the oral argument. She indeed has a legal interest, has a legal benefit from the distribution of the assets of the estate. And there's not any question that she was on notice. Mr. Tanner admitted, that's the other key admission. He admitted that Ms. Alcantara had notice of the original lawsuit, but she chose not to participate. To allow this to go back through the court system would negate the Ruby claim preclusion doctrine, because it would encourage plaintiffs like Ms. Alcantara to do exactly what she did here and say, no, I don't want to participate. And then she lies in wait and sees what happens. And then she indeed pursues a res judicata claim against Brackenhead, because Brackenhead lost on the first trial. But then likewise tries to get a second bite at Wilmer, because the Bourne plaintiffs lost against Wilmer in the first trial. This is the kind of situation that claim preclusion is designed to prevent.
Well, I'm not so sure. What do you make of the last three words in subparagraph 3 of the statute? It says that these heirs' claims and the decedent's personal representative claims may be joined. Certainly would be an indicator that it's not required to be joined, and it certainly implies to me that these are separate actions that can be brought at different times by any of the heirs and the personal representative.
Absolutely. That has nothing to do with whether or not privity exists and whether or not claim preclusion applies. Absolutely. Could Mr. Smith, as the estate of Michael Bourne, the administrator of the estate of Michael Bourne, he was pursuing one action. Mateus Bourne was pursuing another action. Stephen Bourne was pursuing another one, and Peter Bourne was pursuing another one. They could all pursue their own actions at different times, so long as they're within the statute of limitations, no problem. But it doesn't change the application of claim preclusion to any one of them, or any other heir that might be out there, any other heir of Michael Bourne's that was given notice of the lawsuit. But the issue is, yes, are there different damages claims? Sure. But the issue is there the same cause of action, the same cause of action that was already litigated, and Ms. Alcantara's interests were already adequately represented in the first trial? And the answer to that is absolutely yes.
Do you agree with the trial judge's approach to the definition of privity out of the restatement?
Absolutely. Under Ruby, the Nevada Supreme Court is saying, at various points throughout the decision, we're trying to be consistent with the Restatement Second Law of Judgments. At various points. So, the policy behind it, the development of the criteria, the three-prong determination for the claim conclusion, that's all premised upon the Restatement Second Law of Judgments. So absolutely, the definition of privity that is set forth in the Restatement Second Law of Judgment should apply.
So why under Restatement Second under Section 1B, wouldn't her interest be distinct from the 41.054 claims?
I don't have B in front of me, Your Honor. If you are, if you're inclined to set forth the language you're referring to, I'd be happy to address your question.
That's all right. I just was following up on that line of thought, but...
Well, if I may, under Section 41.1, it's providing different opportunities for privity. And it's under C that, under 41.1C, that privity exists in this case. Because plaintiff Alcantara, Sarah Alcantara, is undisputedly a beneficiary of the estate of Michael Bourne, and the administrator of the estate of Michael Bourne is already litigated in the previous trial.
But she has separate interests, separate apart from the other heirs, within a subsection 4 claim under the statute, right?
She has separate damages claims, but this absolutely with respect to each and every case that discusses claim preclusion, the issue is not the different kinds of monetary damages, pain and suffering damages, etc. that may apply. The issue is whether or not the cause of action was already litigated in the prior matter. And here, subsection 2 of the Wrongful Death Statute provides the one cause of action available to all different kinds of plaintiffs. What kind of monetary damages that Sarah Alcantara would have proved or attempted to prove is immaterial to whether claim preclusion applies. Because I think we're confusing the words claim as used in that statute with the word action. In subsection 2, it's specifically talking about the negligence action that may be brought. The different subparts under 4 and 5 are talking about the different types of damages claims. But claim preclusion isn't about whether or not the damages claims are identical. It's about whether or not there was privity and the same issue had already been litigated and there was a final judgment. The rationale that's stated in Ruby and the rationale stated in the restatement second law of judgments absolutely must preclude this kind of action, because plaintiff Alcantara, by Mr. Chandler's admission, absolutely already knew that her half-siblings were pursuing an action against Walmart, and absolutely had every opportunity to join, just as Mr. Chandler is accusing Walmart. Could have been joined by a Rule 19 motion, she could have joined voluntarily when she was asked, and yet she did not. And that decision is held against her. She's the responsible person. Certainly Mr. Tanner, when he was asking, hey, do you want to participate, would have advised her about the law of claim preclusion, and she would have been aware, whether she'd know the advice or not, of what the consequences of her decision not to proceed would be. But whether or not she has different damages claims, because she never saw her father or otherwise, as compared to her half-siblings, has no bearing on the application of claim preclusion. The district court got it right in applying the Ruby criteria here, and in applying the definition of privity that set forth in the restatement second on which Ruby relies. And Mr. Tanner hasn't suggested any other definition of privity. And under the literal application of privity here, and in addition, the contextual application set forth in the case I cited in our brief, Ms. Alcantara's claims against Walmart would be precluded.
Can I ask you one more thing? If we were to conclude that claim preclusion didn't apply to the 41.054 claims, are you familiar with the Evans versus Celotex decision out of California?
So who cited that in our brief?
Yes. And can you tell me a little bit why you think that should apply in this case, in that Walmart has already been found not negligent and not liable, and therefore she would be barred from relitigating in any event?
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. In Evans, the court is saying we need to take a more modern, contemporary approach to the definition of privity. privity is not just talking about an identity of parties or their privies, but also looking at the context in which the application of privity applies. And specifically, the court said, quote, plaintiff's interests in the wrongful death action are inextricably linked to the determination of the deceased's rights in the prior action. The loss they suffered by virtue of the injury caused the deceased, etc., and go on. It would be anomalous to deny recovery to the deceased in one action, but to award damages to his heirs based on the same set of facts and legal issues in the second action. Further, it can be fairly said that plaintiff's legal interests were adequately represented in the personal injury action as if they had been parties thereto. As such, they're deemed to be in privity with them. Absolutely. In the Evans Court, they're taking a modern look at, okay, how do we apply privity? And isn't it true that here, an heir, her relationship to the deceased is what gives her a right to pursue a wrongful death action against Walmart in the first place? Therefore, wouldn't we look at that context in determining whether or not privity indeed exists? Wouldn't we look at whether or not the decedent's rights against Walmart were adequately litigated in the first action to determine whether or not privity exists between plaintiff Alcantara and the administrator of the estate in the first action?
If the jury had found for the plaintiffs against Walmart in case one, would Ms. Alcantara have been able to bring an independent action for her damages and maintain liability on as a bar, a defense? You would be able to assert a defense to liability in the second action.
I'm sorry, I'm not certainly understood your question. Would you mind repeating it?
In case one, had the jury returned a verdict against Walmart for liability, it could not have awarded Ms. Alcantara's damages in case one, because the estate can't recover her damages under the statute. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that it couldn't under the statute, but does Ms. Alcantara have a right to damages that are awarded to the estate? Absolutely, because she's a legal beneficiary of the estate.
But the estate can't recover her damages as an heir.
True, if she has any. True.
So can she bring a second case where she recovers her damages under subparagraph 4?
Absolutely. She would have, she's a minor, and so the statute certainly hasn't told as to her. She could still have sued Walmart, up until 2 years after the age she reaches.
And would Walmart be precluded from asserting the defense to liability in case two because of the outcome of case one?
I hadn't applied the doctrine of claim preclusion in that hypothetical scenario.
That's my question. Doesn't it apply equally against the defendant in the second case?
Well, the second case, the second scenario is different because Walmart would have to have an opportunity to litigate against Alcantara as to her damages. As to liability, yes.
I'm focused only on liability.
Oh, okay. As to liability, yes. Then that's a simple answer.
Okay. Any questions?
No.
All right. Mr. Tanner, thank you, Ms. Hensman.
Thank you.
Just for brief, that is a very appropriate hypothetical. You know, maybe that's an admission, because if she can bring a lawsuit later after a verdict on liability against Walmart, then what's the difference in this case? She's bringing a lawsuit in this case. Walmart got a defense verdict in the first case, but if she could bring a lawsuit...
Well, I think the hypothetical didn't assume that you had the heirs, the siblings as heirs in the first suit.
Yeah.
It might somehow create privity.
You know, I think we can get sidetracked on this privity thing. I think the Ruby factors establish, number one, claim preclusion exists if it's the same party. And I think that's what we got to focus on. Is it the same party or the privileged party? And I think it's clear, and I want you to understand, I think, Judge, you made a very interesting question. Doesn't she recover from the estate, whatever the estate has? And she does. But I want you to understand that. That when an estate has assets, it first, you know, pays its credit claims, and then And that amount of money that the estate has is divided among all the others. So Sarah's share would be one-fourth after all the claims are paid. Now, in this case, Sarah filed a lawsuit to recover an entire amount of separate damages for loss of support, loss of companionship, loss of society. Those set of damages are entirely different than what she would share as a beneficiary of the estate. As a beneficiary of the estate, she would share one-fourth of whatever the net assets to be distributed after payment of all the creditor claims. And in this case, $276,000 is the amount of the creditor claim by...
But the problem, Mr. Tanner, is that your argument is focused on the damages she can recover. And Ms. Ensminger's argument is focused on liability. And as to liability, it seems to me that the estate's position, the two other heirs, or three in case one, and your client's position on liability are all the same. They're all in privity. The question is this, for me, why shouldn't Section 41 of the Restatement of Second, 1C, apply as to the definition of privity when addressing your client's claim on the issue of liability?
Because we have a separate statute in Nevada that addresses claims and what can be recovered by claims. Not liability, claims. We're talking about claims. This case is about claim preclusion. I know we want to go to the liability part, but I think you've got to look at what that restatement talks about are claims. And the claims are different. And that's why I don't think you can look at the liability part and say, well, They got a defense in the first case. Everybody's the same. They would get a defense in the second case. Maybe we will. But what we really should be focused on the issue about claims and what our statute says about claims. That restatement is general law. It's not the law of our state. It's not the law of California. I think most states have separate statutes that deal with claims and what claims can be brought by whom. And I'm not focused on the damages part. I'm focused on the claim part. And this is a lawsuit for a claim for damages. And it's spelled out in the statute. I think the last thing I want to say, and I think you guys have done an excellent job in asking questions that I think go really to the heart of the matter. Should we support what our statutes say and what the joiner says? Don't blame it on a manner of people that she referenced. But people would be motivated if you didn't. If they could have a second bite of the album, they'd kind of lie in wait and see what happens and then file a lawsuit later. That's why we have joinder. When you have a minor, that's why we have joinder. And our statutes that deal with Rule 19 under joinder specifically provides that the court shall order a party as an involuntary plaintiff.
I mean, Mr. Tanner, thank you. I think we understand your position and you're out of time.
Thank you
for your brief. Thank you for your brief, Samson. We appreciate your arguments here today. The case will stand submitted.